Welcome to the Kindling's Muse podcast.
Hi, this is Dick Staub with another in our Journeys series, conversations with thoughtful creatives and cultural influencers on their life, work, and personal journey. Today we continue our conversation with Dr. Kelly James Clark, author of Philosophers Who Believe.
Kelly, I'd like to start, if you could, with just telling us a bit about the sojourn of the gentleman that you've already said has played such a key role, and that is Alvin Plantinga, who's at Notre Dame. How did his sojourn happen?
Well, Plantinga grew up in the Christian Reformed Church, and for him, some of the people in the book, many of them are converts to Christianity. Plantinga can't remember a time when he didn't believe.
Right.
But being sort of inoculated with religious belief, there were still key points in his life. I know he was a student at Harvard and was walking through Harvard Square one night, not being overly happy, and he records in here a religious experience that he has at that point, and it's one. He's probably now about 60, and he had it when he was 17. And it's one to this day that's a very vivid memory for him. He writes a lot about the tremendous influence of his parents, of his church, of his returning to Calvin College, which is where his father had taught, and learning from Harry Jellema and working with Christian philosophers. And a lot of it's writes about his struggles with being a Christian and with being a Christian philosopher.
Yeah. You know, one of the examples of somebody that wasn't raised in a Christian background and that I think people would find very interesting is Mortimer Adler. He really had, he made a genuine sojourn from being raised essentially in a Jewish upbringing through kind of a philosophical course into a personal commitment to be a Christian.
Yeah, it's lucky, you know, Mortimer's must be about 90 or 100 or 1,000 or something.
I think he's 92.
I think he was personal friends with Abraham Lincoln, but his own sojourn is a remarkable intellectual journey in many ways. He's written 50 books, and his books record, I think, the progress that he makes towards religious belief. He starts off writing about going to the synagogue as a boy, and he has a conversion to Thomism. He basically takes on a philosophical belief in God, and he maintains that belief for years. Now, he never gives that up. And it would be difficult to exaggerate how unpopular that view would have been.
But he even, in his own telling of the story, he says, in 1979, when I wrote How to Think About God, I was not yet a Christian.
No, he was preaching in churches, and he wasn't a Christian.
Yeah.
His wife was a Christian, and he went to church with his wife, and he would preach. No doubt he did quite well, but he wasn't a Christian until 1984. In some ways, it's one of the most powerful parts of the book, I think. I'd encourage anyone to pick it up and look at it. Cause, in 84, he took a trip to Mexico, and he got ill when he was down there. He had a virus, and he came back up to the States, and he was in the hospital for 5 weeks, and then he was in bed for several months more, and he went through a mild depression. And the rector of the church where he went visited him, and let me just read, and he prayed for his recovery, and he says he choked up and wept, and let me just read part of this. He says, "The only prayer that I knew word for word was the Pater Noster, the Our Father. And that day and in the days after it, I found myself repeating the Lord's Prayer again and again and meaning every word of it. Quite suddenly, when I was awake one night, a light dawned on me and I realized what had happened without recognizing it clearly when first it happened. I had been seriously praying to God." And so he all of a sudden realizes that he does believe. And it's in this period that he realizes that he's a Christian. He writes a beautiful letter to the rector of his church. And he says, "I was saying when I was praying, 'Dear God, yes, I do believe, not just the God My reason so stoutly affirms, but the God to whom Father Howell is now praying and on whose grace and love I now joyfully rely.
What's wonderful about that story is that he said he has to run it through his mind. He doesn't just allow this experience to hang in suspension. He thinks about it, and he said, this is inconsistent. I've been seriously praying to God, but had I not said at the end of How to Think About God that no one who understood the God of the philosophers as well as I thought I did would worship that God or pray to him? So that's one of the curses, I guess, of having written so many books.
Yeah, it is. is that you, being a philosopher,
you start going back and asking all those questions again. It is one of the wonderful stories. How about the one woman that we have included in this book, Linda Zabzeski? What can you tell us about her?
Well, that was a pretty good try at pronouncing her name.
Zabzeski.
Yeah, that's even better.
Okay.
Linda teaches philosophy out in California, and her life is part of the interest in reading some of this is realizing how smart some people are. I was thinking when you talked about the comfort that it gives realizing that smart people like this do believe. Jesus says that this wasn't revealed to the wise, but it was made wise or made available to the fools and to babes. And
yeah,
I think we fools and babes should be glad that some really smart people do believe. But Linda was remarkably gifted, and her life reflects her sort of increasing awareness of her life as a gift. Her intellect, she's very attractive, she's charming, she's aware that she has it all. She doesn't write about that with pride, but she's aware how gifted she is, and that created a great deal of pressure for her as a child.
Hmm.
In addition, she was in Catholic schools, so she developed a great terror of sin.
Hmm.
And so for her, and then to run off to Stanford University, one of the great bastions of secular learning,
mm-hmm.
As a young Christian struggling with all of that, for her, it's trying to figure out how to put all that together. And for her, it was to, she's Catholic, she went to Mass, got involved, or did not get involved with the sort of usual Christian things that colleges might get involved with, but for her, college was a big struggle. She writes a lot about grad school, by the way. She's the only woman we were able to get to make a contribution and writes about the struggles of being a professional woman.
Hmm.
In philosophy, a very male-dominated field, and having kids, and how to put all that together.
Wow. There are so many wonderful, wonderful stories in here. Would you say that there are certain themes, just real briefly, that emerge? If you look at the compilation of all these stories, there's a certain theme that kind of emerges from them that is consistent throughout?
That would be tough to say. I think all of them have sort of marveled that they've been gifted with divine grace. And
mm-hmm.
And it's been sort of a shock to, it seems to be kind of a shock to everybody and a big surprise.
Huh.
But how that grace is bestowed is remarkably diverse.
Yeah.
Fred Suppe was a practicing homosexual for 20 years. Child of an abusive father.
Mm.
Writes very honestly about it.
Wow.
And how he came to faith is it's a remarkable story, but it isn't like one that anybody else did in the book.
They are all unique, and I'm just going to have to urge people to go out and get the book and read them. The book, again, is Philosophers Who Believe, The Spiritual Journeys of 11 Leading Thinkers, published by InterVarsity.
This concludes our conversation with Dr. Kelly James Clark, author of Philosophers Who Believe. Thank you for listening to The Kindling's Muse. If this program sparks something in you, I invite you to participate at www.thekindlings.com. That's KINDLINGS. Share this program, tell a friend, or just leave a comment at www.thekindlings.com.